Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Paperweight Entertainment Podcast, your home for all things Marvel, DC, Star Wars, and so much more. Join Derek and Ian as they tell tales to astonish along this journey into mystery. Grab some snacks and settle in because Paperweight Entertainment starts now. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Paperweight Entertainment Podcast. I am your host, Derek Hoskins, and with me, as always, is my good friend and yours, Mr. Ian Torrance. Ian, how are you doing, bud?
It's a little earlier than what we normally do, so I'm a little sleepy, a little cranky, a little sore, just because my body takes a few hours to wake up. It cracks like a glow stick for the first few hours, but you know what? Considering all that, I'm not doing too bad, Derek. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty well. It is weird to record this in the morning. We never record in the morning. We always record at night when it's dark, when the sun goes down, where people do dark things.
The sun goes down on my side of town.
Yeah. But you want to tell the people what we're talking about in case they somehow clicked on this without looking at the title of the episode?
For whatever reason, if you are lost and have no idea how you got here, we will put you on the right path and help you find your way. Because that, my friends, is Andor, the finale, episode 12.
Episode 12. Yes.
Oh, man. I was very nervous. I was going to get that wrong. But we are talking about episode 12, the finale of Andor season 1. And just in case you don't know, there is a season 2. I mean, if you watch this episode, you probably know that something's going to happen. So,
correct. Hopefully, we'll get that early, or probably fall of next year. I would imagine it'll be around the same time. I think they're filming now. I could be wrong. I didn't look into that. But yeah, so let's go into this. Spoilers for anybody that is not aware. We'll do full spoilers on this episode. I absolutely hated this finale. I think it's the worst finale that Star Wars has done. Ian doesn't believe me, but I'm very, very serious. I think it was boring. I think it was a true disappointment. I don't like that we got no answers about who Luthen is. I don't like that we got really nothing for Cassian to do. This show forgot that it was about Cassian at the
end. You're being serious?
No, 100%. This is my favorite finale.
There's no way.
No,
you said is true.
No. I was trying to come up with reasons to dislike this show, and I couldn't. All jokes aside,
up with reasons, they were terrible reasons.
All jokes aside,
I was like, no way.
No, I was messing around. Before we started recording, I told Ian that I hated this episode, and he didn't believe me, so I thought I would double down on it while we actually recorded.
I know you too well, my brother. I know you too well. I knew you loved it.
You do. I did. I really enjoyed this. I think it's one of the stronger season finales that Disney Plus has done for Star Wars. I would say the only one that I think was actually better was Mandalorian Season 2, and I think that just because of the Luke Skywalker payoff. No, what season? Season 1, not season 2. No, season... Yeah, no, season 1.
Luke
was at the end of season 1.
Babe. You sure?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, it was season 1 because it sets up season 2 where, yeah.
Yeah, season 1, the finale of season 1. I don't know where my brain went. I actually did a TikTok before we started
recording.
You had
me confused.
Yeah, I'll have to correct that in my video. No one will believe me. But anyway, yeah, I think that the season 1 finale of Mandalorian is the only one that I enjoyed more than this, even though I loved Obi-Wan. I thought that finale was great. I think as far as the story that they were telling throughout this entire season, the tone and the pacing of it and where it leaves Cassian at the end of it, knowing that we're going to get a season 2, I thought that it was almost a perfect finale. I felt incredible amounts of emotion, of inspiration, of despair and sadness throughout this entire episode, and I loved every second of it. So I will not gush since I've talked for the longest already. We'll get into more of it, but for you, Ian, I honestly have no idea whether you like this or not. So I'm curious, what'd you think of this?
I'm always a mystery.
You are.
Well, so my opinion of this finale of Andor season 1, episode 12 in 2022 in November of I'm just kidding. I loved it.
Yeah. I knew it.
I
didn't want to cut you off. I wanted to hear what you had to say.
freaking second of it. It had everything I wanted. Like, it came to a conclusion, even though it opens another door when it closes one, and that's what I liked about it. It closed a chapter one door to open up for chapter two. In my opinion, I think that's what it did. The whole Marva the funerals thing was brilliant. I just thought, like, that's a great plan. They're all going to be distracted here. I wasn't expecting him to like talk everybody into like forming a revolution, which makes sense. But I was really glad that they did that, and I was really glad that no matter what, he wasn't leaving Bix behind. So I thought that was like really cool that he was just like, no, like I'm not leaving. I'm going to get her. And just the whole setup of, you know, throughout the season, if you've been paying attention to the first few episodes, all of his friends were like, you know, distant. Like, they love Cass, but at the same time, they're just like, they don't want anything to do with him because he's kind of a sleaze.
Right.
And he's not like an intentional sleaze. Like, I feel like his heart's in the right place, but his brain just is a little selfish sometimes. Right. And I think that he owed them credits, and then he was always like getting them into situations they didn't want to be in. So they were kind of distancing themselves. But as soon as like he came back there, I think it just showed like how selfless he actually is. And I mean, we've seen it throughout the season of him like shooting the guy who wanted to run off with the credits. And then he made sure that, what's her name?
Val? Is it Val?
Bell.
That sounds right.
He made,
we'll go with that.
He made sure that that she got her credits and that she got the ship and got out of there. So like, we've seen how selfless this man can be, but none of his friends, I thought, like, had really seen that side of him. So I thought it was really cool that when he comes back, they realize, like, you know what, like, He's not bad after all. And like, they all come together and they embrace and they hug. And I think that's like super cool. Like, I know you said that you weren't going to gush, but I'm over here like gushing and having a great time talking about this because I just thought like it was just perfect the way everything was. Cyril is in there just being creepy as shit as always. Oh, Norman Bates in there. Oh, Ichabod Crane, as you call him. Got a skeleton, man.
I was going to wait to bring that up till later, but since you did, I wanted her to be like, in the moment where she's standing there and she's so shocked that it's him, when she said, I should thank you, or I guess I should thank you, or however she worded that, I so badly wanted her to just take the gun away from him, but you're under arrest. Just for whatever reason, I told you to stay away from me. I told you to leave me alone. You didn't do it. Now you're going to go to jail. I so badly wanted that to be.
If anything, he's just pretty much like looking at her and saying like, it's a good thing I was stalking you, right?
Right. I'm so glad they didn't kiss. I was really concerned.
I thought they were going to as well. I was just like, oh, God.
There was that moment and I thought, please don't do it. Please don't do it. But that does mean that we're going to see more of Skeleton Man next season. He's going to be a problem. Old Gay Blue is just hanging out with the ISB. Oh my gosh.
Birthday it is.
Get out of here. Oh my gosh.
Skeleton Man. So.
Anyway, sorry, go on.
So yeah, I derailed the whole thing. I jumped on that train too, buddy. I can't help it. So just everything that was going on with like revolution, and then the one guy that stuck out the most to me, my favorite, was the guy that was up there banging the thing in the tower. And when that stormtrooper comes up, like, what the hell are you doing up here? He's just he Spartan kicks him off the tower. You see he falls over. Which I thought was hilarious.
I did too. I was really brutal
but hilarious.
I was really happy that it didn't happen. I was concerned for that guy. I thought that when the Imperial officer saw him kick the stormtrooper out, and then the next thing you see is the heavy gunner. I thought he was going to order him to blow up the like bell tower, and I'm really glad that didn't happen because that would have been sad. Because that dude has done nothing but just look menacing and bang on like a big bell. And I didn't want him to get killed.
Every episode he's been in where he's been doing that, he's been killing it, man.
He really
I'd
has.
Hire him for a wedding.
He's been great. But, you know, you talked about the funeral a little bit. You mentioned it. Marva's speech, I thought, was perfect. And once again, you know, in that third episode, she had that line about that's the sound of a reckoning that I loved. Mm-hmm. Her speech about how evil festers the most, or it's a disease that festers the most when you're asleep. You know, I know I'm misquoting, but she just kept repeating, I've been asleep. And I loved her. It was an incredibly inspiring speech to the point where it did rile them up finally to say enough. And, you know, the boy that made his homemade bomb, and that could not have worked out better for him. He threw his one like pipe bomb and it just happened to run into all the Imperial grenades, like this big cache.
Oh, you talking about
grenades.
Bruno Mars?
I was thinking like Middle Eastern Shia LaBeouf from Even Stevens.
Okay, that's fair too. Yeah, no, that was great. The whole scene of watching him make that bomb. Yeah. I mean, because you kind of know where he's going with that, but it's just like, I don't know. Like, I enjoyed just watching it make that thing.
I did too. I thought it was great. I'm glad that he survived. I was concerned. And I love that the big guy, I can't remember his friend's name, just immediately started, like, when the Imperial officer.
Basso?
Yeah, the Imperial officer comes over and tries to cover up the hologram. And he immediately takes Marva's brick that she has literally been cremated into and smashes that dude in the face with it. And just starts tearing into people, man.
The fact that, like, he goes to cover the hologram up with this giant jacket and only gets a slither of it. And it's just like...
Yeah, he was pretty ineffectual. He was pretty ineffectual.
Yeah!
He sucked.
Everybody stop looking at that thing! Stop it! Like, or you could just, you know,
move actually
it a
move
little
it.
Bit further.
No, I gotta take this
door
and knock it over.
Close your eyes. Yeah, he just kicked it over.
Well, so, what's funny is I don't know what he thought he was gonna do. It's not like the hologram would stop playing just because it was covered. Like, you would still be broadcasting the sound. They'd still hear her voice.
You don't want to see the inspiration though. That's where the inspiration comes
from.
That's
right. It's all about
the visuals.
You look like. But yeah, that whole scene, the funeral scene is what I was talking about, where I said, you know, it was really inspirational and then really depressing, because they really lingered on, okay, this is a military force that has zero problem open firing into a bunch of unarmed civilians.
Yeah. Men, women, and children. They didn't care.
They lingered on, you know, dragging the people that did get through the line, knock them out, drag them away. They're going to be made an example of later. I thought that was incredibly well done. And then the cuts to Bix up in her like cell or in the hotel room,
still looking rough. Yeah.
Looking terrible while she was following along with the funeral, you know, chanting the words that they were chanting, but, you know, really feebly. I thought that was incredibly well done. Her overall demeanor when Cass finally does show up, you can just see how much they broke her mind. To the point where she doesn't really understand what's happening. It was so well done and heartbreaking. So yeah, I love the funeral. And I was joking that they forgot that this show is about Cassian. Cassian was great in this episode. And I
know you were.
I know that people have said of the earlier episodes that Cassian's story was the one that was the least intriguing of the series, which I disagree with. What I think they're doing is setting him up as Cassian Andor's whole point in Star Wars is that he is an espionage agent. He is a spy. He is not supposed to stand out. He's supposed to be in the shadows. And I think they did that really well, showing that his skill set leads to him being a great spy. And I loved him in this. I loved the fact that he would not, like you said, he was not leaving without Bix. He got he made sure that she was on that ship and told the pilot exactly what to do so that they would get out of there safely before going and confronting Luthen, which was another incredible scene.
Right. Whew. Are you done?
Yes, please go. I took a moment to take a breath so that you could get
You're fine, man. There wasn't a lot happening in this episode, but there was at the same mm-hmm. time, and it's a really cool thing to do in an episode like this, and this setup and everything. Well, yeah, I'm gonna touch on the Cassian thing real quick. I thought it was weird that everybody got on the ship and they were about to take off, and he's like, I'm not going, I'm staying. And of course, B just so sad.
I know.
I love that droid. He's like, no, but and he says, you know, he told him the speech, and then B's like, you always say that to me, and he said, you always come through, and I'm just like, yeah, okay. mm-hmm. So he gets off the ship, and I thought, I don't understand why he would need to get off, like, why wouldn't he go with them? Mm-hmm. And then when you find out why, I kind of saw like certain things coming. So do you think that Mothman, and yes, I am aware that's not her real name. Do you think that that was premeditated, that she set it up to, because she knew the driver was listening?
Yeah, I do.
She was saying that so like they would explain like where the missing credits.
Yeah, went. I think that was very much set up, that she was, well, because the fact that she on purpose told the driver to not listen. Mm-hmm. And then the fact that everything she was saying hit all of the points about where her money would have gone, knowing that her husband was gonna say that was a lie, knowing that the ISB was listening in on her conversations. Mm-hmm. I think that it was absolutely on purpose, because then also the fact that she wrapped up that problem where she can't get cash from her savings or from her family accounts anymore, and that came full circle that she did agree to allow her daughter to meet the like mafia boss's son. I think that she knew that that would wrap up that problem, and that now she has a solution for how she can have more money. And the fact that when the camera on her daughter was great, because they're walking, she, her husband and her daughter are walking down the hallway, the doors open, you see the boy and the parents there. And then it does a slow kind of zoom into the daughter as she's looking hopeful. The father's looking hopeful. If you glance at Mom Mothma's face, she looks disgusted.
Yeah.
She hated herself in that moment. And I thought that it was excellent, really subtle acting from Genevieve O'Reilly, where she's just kind of, you can see how much she hates herself for what she's doing, because she's setting up her daughter for a possible life of what she sees as misery, because, you know, she's in an arranged marriage and she hates her husband, and she's setting her up for this, but for the greater good, she's going to do it. And it's tragic, but incredibly well acted in that moment. Also the costumes, good God, the little kimonos that they're wearing on Coruscant, those costumes are beautiful.
You better tell me where my suit is, woman. It's for the greater good.
I'm the greatest good you're ever going to get. The greatest
good you're ever going to get. Don't tell me what my suit is, woman.
But yeah, so I look forward to more of Mon Mothma next season. Her story was really intriguing all season long.
Yeah, great.
Even though it wasn't a large amount, you know, you kind of knew where it was going, just like you know where Cassian's going. But the idea of how he gets to where he is in Rogue One. Going to the beach of Scarif, buddy. I'm so sorry to break it to you, Ian.
What do you mean? He's going to a farm to make buttermilk.
That's right. He's going to a farm where he can run and play all he wants with other friends.
He deserves that. Him and Marva
are going to be there together.
I knew it. Yeah, the Luthen buildup at the end, and us not knowing exactly where his allegiance is, and him wanting to kill Cassian to keep their secrets, made sense. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, well, you know, we have to kill. But I thought, like, you know, he's a good asset. You may want to just try to recruit him, but I guess he saw him too much of a liability, especially after leaving Vel on the planet. But like, he left her with all the money and everything, so I don't really see the issue there. And then him just manning the fuck up at the end. Mm-hmm. Sorry, there's our explicit tag. I had to. And just being like, you came here to kill me, right? Well, go ahead, kill me or turn me in, whatever you need to do. I'm just like, look at you, man. And that little smug, like a little grin on Luthen's face. And obviously all this is to set up a season two. And I'm here. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I am too. Especially because if you know where Cassian was, like I know you haven't watched Rebels, but there's a character named Fulcrum in Rebels. And Fulcrum, you find out, is a title that has been used by a couple of different people, where they're an informant for the Rebel Alliance, where they pass coded messages. And in Cassian's bio on like Wikipedia and like the, you know, his official bio, he was a Fulcrum at one point in time. So we may see that in the next season. I thought this was a really good way of getting him into like the burgeoning Rebel Alliance before it's a, you know, the Rebel Alliance. It was a believable way for him to come around to it after seeing everything and after hearing the words that his mother wanted him to hear. You know, the whole idea of a spark of the rebellion and everything that she wanted him to know that she said before she passed away. I think that he has been slowly inching towards the, you know, the rebel that we're going to see him as. And he's not quite where he is in Rogue One yet. But I think that by the end of next season, he will be, and it's going to fit in perfectly with Rogue One. And I just, I don't have enough good things to say about this show overall. It was one that I was looking forward to. I know a lot of people weren't looking forward to it as much. But I really, really enjoyed it. And I think that it was incredibly well executed, well acted, well shot, really tight storyline all the way through. And it really did a great job of interweaving multiple storylines and making them all make sense and feeling like you got a full story out of all of them.
It did interweave them. I agree. Nothing interweaves the story.
I'm cold. Leave me alone. I'm out here freezing. There's no insulation in this place.
So do you feel like we pretty much touched on everything and we've done a good job explaining our thoughts on the season finale?
I believe that we have.
Good, because you know what I want to talk about now.
I do. Go ahead.
I want to talk about that post-credit scene.
Uh-huh. I knew you'd want to bring it up.
I want to talk about the fact that they had these little freaking robots the entire time, but still used manual labor.
I know. How vindictive is that of the Empire? It's like, we know we could get droids to do this, but nah, screw it. Let the people that we just picked up off the street
do this. Excuse me. They have another job to do. We're not going to waste our droids on this, okay?
Droids are expensive. Get your
little bony fingers in there.
Droids are expensive. You're expendable.
Yeah. And then and it was building this giant like laser thing for that that giant like it was like a moon.
That's no moon.
Yeah, space thank you. Station. I was hoping you'd get that.
Oh, absolutely.
That's
a line from my favorite Star Wars character. Of course I'm going to get it.
That's no moon. It's a great line, by the way.
It is.
It still holds up today for me personally. I still think that as that was 77 original.
Yep.
I think that line still holds up. It's a great line.
There are That's so many moon. Lines in 77. The original trilogy doesn't get enough credit for how witty it really is. And how genuinely funny and quotable. Like it was. I know everybody thinks of George Lucas as not the best dialogue writer, but that original trilogy was excellent.
Because of, oh, but I was going to go down the Dodge station to get power supplies.
Well, and also the...
I got one.
Well, and the prequels, you know, to be fair, the prequels dialogue-wise were not fantastic. George Lucas was trying to replicate a different era of filmmaking, and it didn't quite hit with most people.
He did fine. I'm just being a horse's ass. I love little nerdy scraggly Luke because I think it really showed his character development that he was this little whiny, bitchy, gangly little kid
that his friends literally called him Wormy.
Yeah,
they called him Wormy in the deleted scenes.
And he never left home, and he was, you know, well, he did, but like he was a loner. Anytime he was ever like with anyone, it was with a droid of some sort. He didn't really have any friends that they showed, at least.
Mm-hmm.
So him like being one character in this little whiny, nerdy, little bratty like teenager, and then going into town and having 3PO and 3PO come in, 3PO shut down all trash bags. So I think going from that to the suave black silk,
mm-hmm.
you know, robes.
Oh, yeah.
Having the one hand, just walk in, arms crossed, just badass. And I think I honestly think it was brilliant writing. I actually thought that it was great character development, because you didn't hate Luke when you first saw him. Like, he was still a likable character. It's just like,
but nobody wanted to be Luke. Way. Everybody wanted to be Han Solo.
It's kind of like, you know, we lost somebody else recently we haven't touched on yet, and that was Mr. Jason David Frank, JD. Mm-hmm. And it's a sad story all around, and I wish we would have thought of this at the beginning, because we gave a few other people a moment of silence, mm-hmm. and Jason David Frank deserves that, and I'm sorry that we forgot to get to that at the beginning. But if you're a Power Ranger, original Power Ranger fan, you grew up like Derek and I did with the movies and show and everything, then you will know the reference. Luke, to me, started off as Billy in season one, where he was real nerdy and real gangly and real bitchy and whiny. And then he becomes a badass.
Yeah.
So character development, even in an old 90s cheesy Power Rangers show. I only use that reference because Derek and I have been talking about it recently because of all the stuff going on with Jason David Frank. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So like we've
lost a few people, man. Like we talked about that last night. The original Meg, Nikki, I can't remember her last name. Mm-hmm. She died from Supernatural. Jason David Frank. We've mentioned Kevin Conroy. We've mentioned T'Challa, Chadwick Boseman. I mean, I'm sure there are others that we have forgotten to mention, but mm-hmm. just been a sad year for deaths and our childhood, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really true. And like Ian said, you know, we normally would have done something about that at the beginning of the episode, but we were just kind of jazzed about Andor because we both kind of watched it and then
it was fresh. We had just watched it. Yeah.
But yeah, Jason David Frank, I can't say enough. You know, Tommy Oliver was a big part of my childhood. I was very young when he became the Green Ranger, and I loved the Power Rangers. Yeah, Tommy was my favorite. I liked Jason until Tommy showed up, and then all of a sudden Jason just could bite me. Tommy was the best.
What was your favorite version of Tommy? Did you like the original Green Ranger? Did you like the White Ranger? Or did you like the Zeo Red Ranger?
Well, I stopped watching before Zeo, or right around the time that Zeo started, so I didn't really watch him as that. But dragons have always been my jam, so I'm more of a Green Ranger guy. Plus, I mean, how can you beat the amazing. Anyway, you're welcome for some mouth flute. Yeah, so the Green Ranger was always my jam. To the point where,
excuse me,
when
is that a flute?
when Tommy had to stop being the Green Ranger, I'm going to tell on myself. Everybody knows how much I cry. I legitimately cried when I thought that he was going to be gone off the show.
Well, you were young too, though.
I was, but I think I probably would have cried if I was an adult. I cry at everything. But anyway, so yeah, thank you so much for everything, Jason David Frank. Incredibly sad news. It passed away way too young. I would take my hat off, but I can't without taking off my headphones.
That's okay. You're disrespectful. They're used to it.
It's fair. very sad times. But we're going to wrap this up and say for everybody in the States, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. We're recording this before Thanksgiving. But it will be released on Black Friday. So if you're a retail worker, I'm so sorry. If you work in delivery like I do, I'm so sorry. We'll get through this together. Hopefully this brought you a little bit of joy on a very, very difficult day for a lot of people in the country. And let us know what you thought about Andor. Your comment on this video if you're on YouTube. Send us an email. You know, hit us up on all the social medias. The links to that is in the description. Ian,
I'm sorry, yes, one sir. Last time before season, because I won't have a chance to say this anymore. and or what.
I'm so glad that I don't have to hear that until next
year. I know. I bet you are.
I got a whole year off from Andor. I saw the smile
as soon as you took that drink. You look so happy. I have a whole year of not having to hear that shit anymore. A terrible joke.
Yeah, it's a great joke. That's why people show up. That's why people watch and listen.
Not the glue, man.
You're the glue. Thank you so much for everybody that has been on this Andor journey with us. Like I said, don't forget to let us know what you thought about it. Follow us on all the social medias. If you're watching on YouTube, like, comment, subscribe, ring the notification bell. And if you're listening on the podcast, please rate and review us. That does help us quite a bit. So for Ian, I have been Derek. Thank you again for watching. Thank you for listening. This has been the Paperweight Entertainment Podcast, and we will see you next time.
Yay!